Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Our guest today is Jim Odato, who covers New York State government, including an influential weekly column for the Albany Times Union. Jim Odato, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alan.
I guess the first thing I want to know, because I know that the Times Union has been doing superb work on things that the average New Yorker never hears about. So I want to start simple and then just sort of move up, because we've been treated to a spate of articles about the New York Racing Association. Now, if you ask the common person on the street, what is the New York Racing Association? They'll have no idea whatsoever. So can we start with that?
Well, the New York Racing Association, also known as NYRA, is the operator of the state-owned thoroughbred horse tracks, Aqueduct, Saratoga, and Belmont. And they have been around since 1955, and they have had the exclusive rights as a result of a franchise with the state of New York to operate these tracks. Every so often, the franchise expires, and it seems as if NYRA is usually in the midst of some kind of scandal when that happens. But somehow, they've always come out with another extension of that franchise. The current extension happened in 2008 under Governor Eliot Spitzer. Somehow, they were in bankruptcy at the time. They emerged from bankruptcy with a 25-year extension to that franchise. So it extends till 2033.
Wow.
And they're currently in the midst of their most recent scandal. And they are facing a governor, Governor Cuomo, who is keeping a very close eye on their operations, more close of an eye than probably in the history of this entity.
Okay, so are they a not-for-profit?
They are a not-for-profit. They, in fact, are religiously not-for-profit. They usually are
losing
in
money.
The red, and that's one of the problems in the past. The comptroller's office has frequently overseen some of their finances and indicated that not only do they not pay franchise fees, they often have in the past spent lavishly on themselves and have spent, on sole source contracts that were inappropriate. They've done a lot of things in the past, but they were supposed to, under the agreement in 2008 with the Spitzer administration, become a new NYRA, a reformed one, with a different board, a different way of operating, more transparent, more oversight, et cetera. But they find themselves in another situation right now.
And what is this present scandal?
Well, the current one is one that the Times Union wrote about last year. At the end of last year, it came to light that they were overcharging bettors the commissions they're allowed statutorily to take out of each bet. Exotic bets. These are multi-horse bets, exotic bets. They call them superfectas, things like that. They were taking 26% commission. As of the middle of September 2010, that commission statutorily was supposed to fall to 25%. They did not mark down the 1%. They continued to collect at 26%.
What kind of numbers are we talking about?
We're talking
here?
Millions of dollars from bettors, from wagerers. It ended up being $8.5 million over 15 months until the problem was detected by state regulators.
Who were those regulators? Was it DiNapoli and his controller's office, or was it Andrew? You mentioned Governor Cuomo keeping a close eye on him. Who gets the credit for blowing the whistle?
Well, I think more to the point is who should be blamed for missing this mistake. But what happened was the comptroller's auditors were taking a look at an unrelated audit. They were looking at the New York State Breeding and Development Fund, which is another horse fund that gets some money from some of the revenues of wagerers. And in this audit, they started looking at what the appropriate takeout rate, which is the commission that NYRA is allowed to take out of bets. And they had some questions. So they called up the Racing and Wagering Board, which is the regulator of racing. And they said, hey, listen, what's the takeout rate supposed to be? Lo and behold, they realized that NYRA, since September 15th, 2010, had been overcharging these exotic wagerers. And it had added up to about $8.5 million in overage, more money than they were due. And it was those two agencies that got to the bottom of it the end of last year. NYRA at the time said they were surprised. The NYRA executive said this was a surprising development, an inadvertent mistake, something that was an innocent and honest mistake.
Is that possible?
Because of the complexities of racing law. It's possible, but according to the investigation that the Cuomo administration insisted on as to how this happened, the initial evidence that has been collected by the Racing and Wagering Board suggests that it wasn't an honest mistake, that the chief executive officer and some of his people were alerted months and months before detection by the state regulators that this overcharging had been taking place. And it's a situation that appears as if at this point that the cover-up is worse than the mistake.
As often happens.
Yeah.
What's in it for them? The executive director makes $450,000, something like that, $1,000. It's a not-for-profit. What's in it for him to cheat?
Well, I wouldn't consider this under the category of some kind of honest services crime or something like that, because there's no bribery or kickback for the president of the New York Racing Association. According to the emails, you could deduce that at the time that this overage was happening, NYRA's finances were sour. They were having another period of operating in the red. They were looking forward to the onset of VLT revenues. Video lottery terminal revenues were supposed to start up in the fall of 2011, and that was seen
at the racetrack.
At Aqueduct Racetrack.
Yeah.
And they were seeing that as a way to get out of the revenue problem that they were having. You got to realize that racing is a dying industry. It's not like the National Football League, in which it just keeps going up and up.
And why is it dying?
It's not, you know, I'm not 100% sure. I'm not really clear on that, but it's clear that fewer people, maybe it's the aging of the population, the younger people aren't attracted to going to the races or going to OTB parlors or whatever. And understanding the complexities of wagering on horse racing, it's not as easy as it seems. It's not as easy to make money as it seems. And, you know, it's other than the Kentucky Derby, which happens to be this weekend, and a couple of other big races, people don't really watch racing on TV. It's not on TV that much, other than on, you know, cable TV stations.
I was in an OTB parlor here in Albany one time. It was one of the more depressing experiences that I've ever had. I mean, it was really sort of scary.
Well, yeah, that I've heard that before, and I know the OTBs are trying to do something about that, too, to try to make them more sexy and lively and things like that. But it is a difficult sell. It's not like, you know, watching professional football or NHL hockey or something like that. So, you know, it's a different sell. Maybe it's an age thing. I'm not sure.
Maybe, you know, fewer people listening to classical music. We know that. There's fewer people doing this. So things change.
Yeah. But anyway, when this overage was taking place, according to some of the emails that have been collected by the Racing and Wagering Board, it appeared as if the executive of NYRA didn't believe the time was right for another embarrassing disclosure about revenues that NYRA was not due. When NYRA needed extra revenues.
And how soon were you into the race, Jim Odotto?
Into the race?
In other words, when did somebody pick up the phone and say, you ought to look at this for the Times Union?
Well, you know, the thing is, as it was happening in December of 2011, I started hearing about it. And
from sources?
Yeah. And, you know, it's I've sort of made a little bit of a living of writing about the New York Racing Association, because in 2002 I was hearing lots of problems associated with it, which ended up leading to a 2003 indictment by NYRA. NYRA was indicted by the United States Attorney's Office for participating in a tax fraud. And in a deferred prosecution agreement worked out between the federal government and NYRA, they were supposed to reform at that time as well. They did reform in some respects. They changed their management. But many people believe the culture of NYRA, which has always been one that was described as arrogant, had not changed appreciably. I do believe that they tried. They became more concerned about their public image. They did get some new chairmen who were trying to direct that entity in a different direction. And it looked like they were making some strides. But again, they keep providing ammunition to those who would want to criticize them as ineffective and mismanaged.
Well, tell us a little bit more, Jim Odotto, about the cover-up. How did that work?
Well, I mean, you know, if it was a cover-up, it's impossible to know for sure because the Racing and Wagering Board's investigation is not completed. What they provided the public this week was a preliminary report, an interim report, or an early report, because the findings that they stumbled on early on were so significant, they just didn't want to wait the extra weeks or months that it would take before the completion of this report to reveal what they had found. And what they had found were some emails that suggested that the New York Racing Association's top officers were talking about this issue of commissions as early as 2010. Wow. It had come up in some of the emails they had the Racing and Wagering Board investigators had collected. And it was obvious it was on their mind. But even more damaging from NYRA's perspective was some emails that had popped up in the batch of materials that NYRA turned over to the investigators from August of 2011 that were between Chief Executive Officer Charles Hayward and the publisher of the Daily Racing Forum, Stephen Crist. And those two people are friends. They used to work with each other at the Racing Forum. Mr. Crist indicated that he had been contacted by a reader of the Racing Forum who was concerned that NYRA was overcharging in terms of the commissions that they were allowed to charge. And he communicated in an email issue to Mr. Hayward. Mr. Hayward responded that the reader was correct, that they were doing this, that NYRA was doing this, and they were looking into this issue. And Mr. Crist indicated in his emails that
Crist being from the Racing Forum.
The Racing Forum.
The sort of official or semi-official newspaper of the industry.
Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Crist indicated in the email that, you know, that we should get back and talk about that. And it never happened, apparently.
Nor did the Racing Forum, to my understanding, ever really do justice to the subject.
Well,
right?
They never disclosed this issue until after December, months later, December of 2011, when it became a public issue, when the regulators found out about it, the Racing Forum and Mr. Crist wrote about this and said, hey, look what happened, and indicated in a column that it appeared that it was an honest mistake. But Mr. Crist has since, as a matter of fact, in the last couple of days, on his blog on that Racing Forum site, indicated that he did not know what was going on at that time, and he believes that Charlie didn't really know what was going on either. And he emphasized that the conversation between Charlie Hayward and himself was off the record. And so, you know, an off-the-record conversation between a journalist and a source is, you know, I mean, it's something that needs to be pursued. You know, what exactly was that conversation? What was that exchange? We don't really know. There's more to this story, I'm sure, and I'm sure the Racing and Wagering Board in the weeks ahead will have a fuller explanation as to where things stand. But it appears that the New York Racing Association's Board of Trustees is treating this exchange and this revelation in the Racing and Wagering Board report very seriously, because the day the report came out, the Racing Association took action, and they asked Charles Hayward and the general counsel of the New York Racing Association to take an administrative leave without pay for an indeterminate amount of time.
It's fascinating because it gives us a look into the way in which things work in government, and I really appreciate the fact that you've taken the time to explain it so well. I just wanted to take a look at the greater politics here. So the original whistle was blown by the comptroller's office, but we know that the governor doesn't care much for the comptroller. Now the governor is trying to grab some of these headlines and say, "You to his people, you go investigate it," when once again, it's the comptroller who is doing his job.
Yeah, well, the comptroller, by virtue of perhaps luck, stumbled on this problem. Now, by the same token, the comptroller has in the past sent auditors into NYRA to look at their finances, and they did not detect this overage when they did a specific look at NYRA's finances. As a matter of fact, many entities who looked at NYRA's finances did not detect this matter. NYRA's own independent auditors that they pay substantial sums of money, outside auditors, professional auditors, didn't find it. The Racing and Wagering Board did not find this
Just
stuff.
One question real quick, Jim. The Racing and Wagering Board, we didn't define it earlier, is the statewide racing and wagering.
Yeah. It's an agency of state government. It's essentially under the Cuomo administration.
Gotcha.
And the Cuomo administration has control of something known as the Franchise Oversight Board. Like I was indicating before, in 2008, when NYRA emerged from bankruptcy, one of the deals it made with New York State in order to get the franchise extended was that it would submit itself to a franchise oversight board. This franchise oversight board is chaired by the New York State budget director, Robert Megna, who is an agent of Governor Cuomo.
Sure.
And the franchise oversight board, I will note, did not notice this violation of racing law either.
Well, why were they there? They weren't getting it right.
Well, I got to tell you one thing. The Franchise Oversight Board has been poking and prodding NYRA like no other oversight that I can think of. They've really been on NYRA's case.
But they didn't find this.
But they didn't find it. All these entities have very small investigatory wings. I mean, the Franchise Oversight Board essentially has none. The Racing and Wagering Board has a understaffed one. And the comptroller's auditors missed it as well.
Like, but they got it in the end.
They got it in the end.
By accident or not,
they got
the credit.
They got it.
Tom gets the credit, right?
I would say that, you know, thank God for those auditors.
Yeah.
Because it was a mistake that needed to be detected. The thing is that there were people in the world who were aware of this, that the law required the 1 point deduction. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know what happened to those people. There were people that should have known. And obviously some bettors, some people in the industry were aware of it because at least one of them contacted New York Racing Association in 2010 and asked about it, according to some of the emails. So, you know, if it was a cover-up, then it's a big deal. But there is more to know about where and when and how NYRA figured this out.
As you say in Watergate, what did you know and when did you know it? Our guest is Jim Odato. Let's go to one other question, and we can spend 5 minutes on it. Mm. Are we going to have casinos in New York State, Jim? And where are they going to be? And how's it working? You only have 5 minutes to do this. It's not really fair.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, the governor is behind a idea to changed the New York State Constitution to allow for up to 7 commercial casinos. And the legislature passed that resolution. It has to pass a second time next year. And if it passes that second time, it has to go to a statewide referendum, see if the general public goes along with it. So the question is as to whether I think that they can get second passage. Next year, the state and the legislature and the governor have to come to terms as to what the enabling legislation would be.
In other words, where will these places be?
Yeah. So put some detail, some meat on the flesh of this. Right now, the resolution simply says let's change the Constitution, allow up to 7 more casinos.
But we know what's going on here. The Catskills is going to get one. Lower New York City is going to get one, obviously. What about the Indians? Do the Indians, who have right now been had these treaties, do they get to run all of these casinos, or will these be run by other people?
Well, the legislation, I suspect, will not bar Native Americans from bidding for one of the 7 spots. Mm-hmm. However, the likelihood is that big, well-financed casino companies will wow whoever makes the decisions on the 7 sites and the 7 projects. But the Native Americans have had a monopoly in New York State. They can get permission to run Class 3 casinos, that being Las Vegas kind of casinos, on Indian territory. That has been the lay of the land for as long as possible. The thing is, many areas want casinos, particularly the Catskills, and there is not Indian territory in the Catskills. So one way to get a casino in the Catskills is indeed to change the Constitution. It is likely that Sullivan County would be a designated site. You have a very well-organized racino industry. The track operators that already operate these so-called casinos that are VLT palaces are pushing for the opportunity to have first crack at being casino locations. To answer your question, is it going to happen? The polls that have come out so far indicate that New Yorkers are pretty much split 50-50 on this.
So it could go either way in the referendum.
It could go either way in the referendum. Now, the Oneida Indian Nation, which runs Turning Stone Casino in Verona in central New York, which has hired a bunch of people, they have a team working on this issue. I suspect that they are not supporters of a constitutional amendment that could threaten their monopoly in New York State.
And in fact, the Catskills, they're beginning to fight about who gets it there, the big hotels.
Sure.
And one guy I heard on the radio, our station, the other day saying, well, we only want one, or maybe 2.
Right.
But not for everybody.
Right, right. There's going to be a free-for-all in terms of if 7 sites are allowed, there's going to be all kinds of competition for them. But the Oneidas have hired a polling expert, and the polling expert just came out with some information. As a matter of fact, he's Barack Obama's pollster, who just interviewed 800 New Yorkers on this subject. Are you in favor of a constitutional amendment? And they found that there was about 50% support for it. But this pollster indicates that when you provide New Yorkers with a new initiative like this, a proposition on the ballot, you better start with 60% support if you expect it to win. So it seems as if this initiative at this point is in trouble. But by the same token, if the governor uses his bully pulpit, and if the legislature uses their bully pulpits, if there is a lot of intense lobbying in favor, they might be able to swing it. But by the same token, I think there's going to be a lot of very intense negative campaigning toward this, because there are a lot of interests, the Atlantic City interests who want to protect their business, the Connecticut interests that want to protect their business, and the Indian interests that want to protect their businesses, will probably be united with church groups and others.
Who have bingo, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Who will probably be very active, particularly, I think it's going to be in 2013. You'll be hearing a lot of back and forth on this subject.
Well, Jim Odotto, we love having you here. Our guest on the Capitol Connection has been Jim Odotto, who covers New York State government for the Albany Times Union. He specializes in investigative and in-depth reports, and we sure heard about that today. I have an understanding of both subjects that I never understood before. Jim, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
The Capitol Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capitol Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in Albany. Support for The Capitol Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. and NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.